questions? So 22 is describe how a blanket keeps a person under it warmer than they would be without a blanket. Avoid using the word trapped. So the picture you should have is that we have a heat source, energy that is being continually released, and it's I'll do it a couple of ways. It's going to build up until we have as much heat leaving the surface of the blanket as we have heat being produced underneath the blanket. And it takes some temperature difference in order to drive that energy through the blanket. And we said for conduction, the temperature difference is going to be proportional to the R factor and the amount of heat that's produced. So if we have a thicker blanket, there's going to be a bigger temperature difference between the inside and the outside of the blanket. So kind of another way of looking at it is to think about, you know, this example that was another problem, and maybe you want to ask me about that one too, where we have this analogy between water that's flowing into a cup. And the water that's in the cup corresponds to the energy that is stored under the blanket, or equivalently, it corresponds to the temperature change. And if we start out with no temperature change, no difference between the top and the bottom temperatures of the blanket, what's going to happen, of course, is the water level is going to build up. But eventually, we'll reach the case where the energy that's leaking out from the top of the blanket is exactly matching the energy that's coming in from underneath the blanket. If we put a thicker blanket on it, what a thicker blanket means is that for the same temperature difference, less water escapes. So it's like making the hole smaller. And the equivalent thing that'll happen then, of course, is the water level will rise to a higher level so that we're, again, in equilibrium, where as much water is flowing in as flowing out. Maybe it's smart to go through that other question kind of immediately while we're... So this is 39 that we're talking about, and there's a picture pretty similar to what I drew on the board. So and here the context is explicitly the greenhouse effect. So the inflow is analogous to the sun heating the surface of the earth. So that's sunlight heating the surface of the earth. The outflow is analogous to the energy that's leaving the earth in the form of infrared radiation, right? We looked at that spectra. And the water depth is analogous to, I think the best answer is the temperature difference between the bottom of the atmosphere and the top of the atmosphere. But if you wanted to say it, I think you could say it's the heat that is detained inside the Earth's atmosphere for a limited period of time. For the bucket, if we allow greater inflow, the water level will rise. What change would be analogous to that? So that would be like increasing the sunlight. You know, maybe the reflective nature of the clouds of the earth could become less reflective, so more energy hits the surface of the earth, or the sun brightened, or the earth was closer to the sun. One way or the other, we have to get more sunlight at ground level in order to do the equivalent of increasing the inflow. If we reduce the size of the hole, what's that analogous to? Well, the size of the hole is analogous to kind of how thick the blanket is, in the sense that the thinner the hole, the thicker the blanket. That is to say, the size of the hole determines how much energy leaks out for a given temperature difference, for a different altitude. So reducing the size of the hole would be equivalent to somehow making the atmosphere more insulating, for example, by increasing the amount of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere or making it simply thicker. Any of those things would do that phenomena. So number 40, is that what you said? So this is, of course, a thermal wind problem. And what we have is an attempt to draw in three dimensions a slice of the, I guess in this case, Earth's atmosphere, but we had very analogous pictures to this in the case of the Jovian planets, in particular Jupiter. So apparently this is a picture in the northern hemisphere, so we're thinking that the Coriolis force is going to act to the right. And so first of all, we're looking at the pressure at various locations. And you remember that those lines are constant pressures. And of course, as you go up, it's getting smaller. So if you look at A prime and A, notice that A is above this level, which means that it has to be at a lower pressure. So the highest pressure is going to be A prime. And then A, and similarly, if you notice that B is B prime is effectively deeper than B. So that's the list from high to low pressures. The density of the air. Well, the only reason the pressure is going up slower on the prime side, right? So we have to go up higher physically. Yeah, so we have to go up higher physically to obtain the same sort of pressure difference for the prime side as for the unprime side, is because it's lower density air. Remember that the pressure is literally the weight of the air, so if you have lower density air, you're going to have to go further in order to have the same weight. So evidently, the air on the prime side is lower density air. And remember that density is related to temperature. The higher the temperature, the more expanded the air is, which is to say the lower the density of the air is. So evidently, the air is hotter under the primed column than it is under the unprimed column. Okay, so here we have a geostrophic approximation. That's where we're balancing the pressure force. And I hope it's clear that A is at a lower pressure than A prime. So there's a pressure force that's trying to push the air north. And that has to be balanced. There has to be some force that's pushing to the south. And if we think about what that could be, right? So kind of in the United States, there's some force here that's trying to push this air, not at the surface, but at altitude, trying to push it north. So we have to have a force that's pushing it south. And the way we could do that would be to have the air moving fast that way, because then the Coriolis force to the right would be balancing the pressure force. So what direction is this on this piece of paper? Well, it's eastward. It's into the page. Right? So if the wind is blowing kind of into the page, then to the right will be a force that's to the south, and we can then have a geostrophic approximation. Okay, so the zones were the hot areas on a Jovian planet that had rising air, and the belts were the darker areas that had falling air. So the primed column is the thing that's like the hot rising air. So of course, for all of these cases, when you go up, you're going to lower pressure. But if you look carefully, remember the lines are constant pressure surfaces. So if you look at the picture, the pressure here is the same as the pressure there, and A is above it. Right? So A has to have less pressure than A prime. Right? A has the same pressure as about there on that other column. Because when you go up, it's less. So at altitude, at ground level, everything's at the same pressure. But at altitude, The right-hand side, the south side, is the higher pressure air at the same altitude.
For number 27, when it comes to like the magnetic field, why specifically is Venus different than the Earth?
So first of all, how is it different? It lacks a magnetic field. Right, so Earth has a magnetic field, Venus lacks a magnetic field. And it's not like there are right and wrong answers to this question, because you just have to write down a credible answer. So I would say the most credible answer is that that Venus isn't spinning fast enough to have a magnetic field. So we think we need a conducting, convecting fluid and spin in order to make a magnetic field. And boy, it's hard to believe that Venus's interior is any different from the Earth's interior. So it pretty much must have a conducting iron core. And therefore, spin might be the answer. The other answer that people come up with occasionally is a somewhat subtle case. And that is, in the cases where we know magnetic fields exist, we also have a solid inner core, right? Mercury and the Earth. And although it's not, the exact mechanism isn't exactly clear, it's possible, A, that Venus lacks a solid interior core, just because that's a very close thing for the Earth. If you change things just a little bit on the Earth, you could get rid of the solid inner core. And that maybe it's necessary to have a magnetic field. So I would say you'd get full credit for that answer, but it's, I think, practically speaking, a less good answer, because it's hinging on lots of unknowns.
For 38, could you just show us what kind of sketch of it want for the Earth's?
So I could, of course, just reproduce what's there. So we're supposed to show everything, right? So we're supposed to show rifts and subduction and all those sorts of things. So I guess I would start with a rift, right? So a rift is where we have new crust that's being created. And what's happening here is hot stuff is rising and forming new rock at this rift. And of course, this is the convection cell. And since all of this stuff is moving, this must be part of the asthenosphere. And the part of the crust that is rigid is the lithosphere. So this is all nicely rigid. Might include a little bit of the top of the mantle. Generally speaking, all of this happens under the ocean, so this is probably oceanic crust. It doesn't have to be that way, but let me put my oceans there. To have continents stand high because they have roots. So if you go up, you better go down. Here's my mountain range. Better go down even more. Well, I'm going to have some subduction here. So that's where crust is being destroyed. So this crust is moving underneath this other piece of crust. So this was subduction. This was continental crust. Thicker and balanced. What else was I supposed to show? So created at the mid-ocean rift zone and destroyed in subduction zone. Oceanic crust, lithosphere, asthenosphere. The mantle would include the asthenosphere and maybe a little bit below the crust on down. Convection cell, subduction, area of mountain building on which way the plates are moving, right? So this plate is moving this way, this plate is moving that way. Where can I have some mountain building? So there are lots of ways that you can build mountains. The Himalayas are being built because we have two regions of actual continental crust that are colliding, and they're pinching up the mountains. Another way we can get mountains, and this is kind of more like what's happening on the coastal range, is we have subduction, and this stuff is made out of relatively low-density material. So when it melts, it's going to dribble to the top, and we can build volcanoes from that material. My continental crust is way thicker than it needs to be, but it's nice to exaggerate things to make the grading easy. So this was the mid-ocean rift zone. And there's a nice picture like that in your book. Well, there's a nice picture much better than that in your book. So there's also be a nice convection cell that is leading this stuff down. What evidence could you give that Mars once had a much more massive atmosphere, and explain how whatever you're talking about measures the size of atmosphere? So liquid water is what I have in mind. There's sure signs of flowing water in the form of dried up stream beds on Mars. And currently the atmospheric pressure is low enough that you can't have liquid water. So currently, water would go from solid to gas like dry ice does at Earth's atmospheric pressure. So we need on the order of 10 times more pressure than Mars currently has in order to have liquid water on the surface and to leave flow marks, therefore, on the surface. Oh yeah, yep. So anything that names the sun is not on your agenda. Look for those to appear on the final. Moon and Mercury look much the same. That's certainly true. We've got heavily cratered highlands is what we call them in the case of the moon, and we've got flood basalt mare, which is what we call them on the moon. But differences exist. Provide one feature that they both have. Well, I just named lots of them that they both had. Impact craters would be another one that they both had. And one feature that only one has. Well, magnetic field comes immediately to mind. Big iron core. High density. So the interior of Mercury is probably nothing like the interior of the moon. The exterior of Mercury, which is just a consequence of being battered, they're very similar. So another feature that Mercury has that Mars didn't, I don't know how much I mentioned this, is scarps. And these are regions where it looks like one piece of crust is kind of pushed past another, leaving a cliff. And that's usually attributed to shrinking of Mercury. Internal structure of the four gas giant planets. What evidence points to a difference in structure between the inner and the outer ones? So the difference that I would point to for between the two has to do with the magnetic field. Remember that the ice giants have these funny off-center, highly non-aligned magnetic fields, whereas Saturn's and Jupiter's magnetic field is similar to the Earth's in that it's more or less aligned with the spin axis and more or less centered on the planet. So in terms of the internal structure, for the gas giant planets, for Saturn and Jupiter, we have liquid the pressures are so high, they're very massive objects. Remember, Jupiter is more than the rest of the solar system, the rest of the planets of the solar system packed together. So Jupiter and Saturn are big enough that they have the pressures that are necessary to convert what we think about usually being a gas into being something like Mercury, a metal. So the deep inside Jupiter and Saturn, we have a highly compressed hydrogen that's in the form of a metal. And we don't have that for the ice giant planets, for Uranus and Neptune. There we think we have this kind of ocean, this kind of salty ocean of very high temperature, very high pressure water. And that's probably the source of the magnetic field for those guys. So in terms of the atmospheres for both of them, it's mostly hydrogen and helium. There's a slight difference with Saturn. We think that it's lacking in helium because it's probably differentiated and fallen out. In terms of the dynamics, there's pretty striking differences. So for both Jupiter and Saturn, we have lots of zones and belts, and we have a high-speed super-rotating equatorial jet. Whereas with the ice giants, we seem to have, I don't know, you could either say one zone and one belt. We have one velocity that's going sub-rotationally at the equator, and then we have high-speed jets in the north and south hemisphere, but not multiples of them. Both, I'm maybe working away from what the question is, both Neptune and Uranus look like blue balls because they have methane in their atmosphere. Which question was I answering? 29. So I was just talking about internal structure. So I think I've covered everything else I was starting to mention wasn't internal. So the two methods that are being thought about is counting craters and then picking up rocks and taking them home and analyzing them. So there are lots of naturally occurring elements that have half-lives that are measured in billions of years. And so the fraction of it that's left tells you how long it's been sitting around. So we started out talking about carbon-14 when we were doing this on Earth, and that actually has a pretty short half-life of about 5,000 years, so it's good for dating human artifacts. But if we're dating rocks, we're typically thinking about like potassium krypton. And what happens is that some of the potassium is radioactive and it'll decay away. And you can look at the ratio of the stable isotope of potassium and the unstable isotope of potassium, and seeing what they are now gives you an estimate of when the material was last molten. And for carbon-14, it's pretty straightforward, right? You just look at the ratio of carbon-14 to carbon-12, and the carbon-14 is the unstable isotope, so if there's relatively little carbon-12, the material has been sitting around for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really thinking that you're going to memorize the densities of all of these planets. So it's a matter of kind of put together a consistent story. So generally speaking, the stuff that's close to the furnace we're going to think about as being denser than the stuff that's furthest away. So on that basis, you're going to think about Mercury as having a higher density than the Earth. And it turns out that's not exactly true, but I would certainly grade it correct, because if you uncompress them, that would be the case. And it turns out that Venus and Earth have pretty much the same density, and it's kind of downhill from there. So the moon is a special case, of course, because it's not, you know, it's just the crust that was chipped off of the Earth. So it has a lower density than Mars, but Mars would be next on the list. So when you look at the giant planets, we're looking at relatively low densities, and kind of the thing that's coming into play is how compressed they are. So Jupiter and Saturn have pretty much the same size, but Jupiter's larger mass means that it's more compressed. So between Jupiter and Saturn, Jupiter has the larger densities. Now, what's a little bit less clear is how you fit in the ice giants. So they're not mostly gas. They have a good amount of rock in them, too. And so it turns out that the ice giants are about the same. Technically speaking, Neptune is a little bit more than Uranus, but more than Jupiter. So I'm not sure exactly which ones I asked you about, but it's probably more important to kind of get that those general features. Ice giants are going to be more than the gas giants, approximately speaking. I probably wouldn't ask you to compare Uranus and Neptune because they're moderately close, but in fact, Neptune's more. And of course, Saturn is the least. Mars is less than the other terrestrial planets. So the ones I guess we particularly asked about were Mars, Mercury, Moon, Saturn, and Uranus. So Saturn is going to be least. Mercury is going to be most, so it's going to be Mercury, Mars, Moon, Uranus, Saturn. Say again?
Can you describe nuclear winter again?
So my usual analogy is that it's the body being dead under the blanket. So if we put a blanket over a dead body, it's not going to keep warm, right? It's not going to stay warm because there's no heat production anymore because the guy is dead. And so what nuclear winter is going to do is it would cut off the sun's light from hitting the surface of the Earth. So remember, the whole process started because sunlight was heating the ground. Well, if it's so dark because of 100% cloud cover that sunlight isn't heating the ground, then we're going to cool off to the temperature of what is heating us, which will be those clouds, which are cold.
So those clouds that would be covering the atmosphere, so they would not allow any heat in, but they would allow heat to be lost, because the heat that you already have from the sun, would that just be lost?
Yeah, but you know that when the sun goes down, it gets cold, right? It gets cold at night. And so we'd be basically talking about a night that lasts months or maybe a year. So we're going to be continually cooling off during that time. And the other thing that's a little bit special about the nuclear winter clouds is they're typically higher than the clouds that we have out here, which are usually just a few kilometers up. So the idea is that this nuclear burning would produce huge plumes that would put this dust above the troposphere, into the stratosphere. So they're even colder clouds than what we've got. But yeah, you do notice that on a cloudy night, it doesn't get as cold as on a clear night, because more of the heat can escape. So the clouds would help you keep the heat in, and that would be good if these clouds were only going to last 2 or 3 days. But the plan is that they're going to last for months to a year. So this is another rank ordering problem. And what are the things that affect escape velocity? So we're talking about mass and we're talking about physical radius. So I hope it's clear right from the get-go that the giant planets are going to have giant escape velocities. And that Jupiter has the same physical size, but more mass, so it's going to be the highest escape velocity. It's going to beat out Saturn. Moon is going to have pretty low escape velocity because it's a small, low-mass object. Mars is going to come next on the low side. So what we've got from high to low is going to be Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Mars, Moon. And of course, the Earth would be better than Mars if it were on the list. Venus would be pretty much the same as the Earth. Mercury would just be a little bit less than the Earth. So again, the plan isn't for you to memorize those numbers, but to have an idea of what's causing those numbers. And I'll try not to give you comparisons that would be hard to guess, right? I don't know. I think actually Venus has a slightly lower escape velocity than the Earth, but they're very similar. Yes, yep. So I think it says on that problem, doesn't it? Constellation names and stars? It will on yours. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, so I'm getting hard in my old age, I guess. No, it'll say constellations too for you. So those are the two methods of dating rocks?
Yeah.
So for the moon, we have picked up rocks and we've taken them home and we can analyze them using radioactive decay methods. Okay. So it's kind of like carbon-14 dating, except actually typically they use things that have longer half-lives than carbon-14. Okay. So radioactive decay dating is a perfectly good answer by itself. So the other way is by counting craters. The older a surface is, the more pot-marked we expect. It's going to be beaten up because it's been around for a while.
Can we just go over the true-false number 9?
True-false number 9, assuming I wrote it correct on the board. Yeah. So Venus certainly has concentrated sulfuric acid clouds. That's true. Oh, wait. Yeah, true. So it's too hot for any rain to reach the surface. It would evaporate long before. So oddly enough, it looks, so we have these pictures from the surface of Venus, and they look like uneroded rocks. So even though there are lots of clouds, there's nothing actually hitting the ground to cause erosion.
It evaporates before it touches the ground.
For sure. Yep. Okay. Like 500 C. So it's super hot. Doesn't come close. So what determines where the clouds are is the temperatures are low enough to have droplets. So the temperatures in the clouds are actually not that different from the temperatures of Earth. You know, because you have water droplets. Yeah, they're floating. Yeah. Yeah, they're both moving and floating and all of that, right? So this stuff down here, the Athenosphere, is quasi-liquid. And, I mean, it is true. What happened is the glaciers came and wiped out that mountain. And what happens is the same thing that happens with icebergs, right? You cut off the top, they just pop up again. Now, this stuff isn't as liquid as water, so this process doesn't take 2 minutes. It takes tens of thousands of years. But what's happening in Canada now is the ground is growing. It's getting higher altitude with time because it's now unloaded by having the glaciers, so it's popping up.
So if we put another glacier up on top,
it'll sink, yep. Yep. So there's clear evidences that rivers used to flow the opposite direction that they are currently, and what's happening is it's rising there. So the Red River has, currently, of course, it goes kind of both directions, as you know. So I don't like that. So the moon keeps the same face to the Earth, right? So no matter when you look at it, you see the same moon in the sky. But what that means is that if this face is facing the Earth now, and 2 weeks later we see the same face, it's rotated, right? It's gone from going like this to being like that when it was over here. So the rotation period of the moon is the same as its orbital period, about a month. So it's a slow rotator, not a stopped rotator. I can't think of anything that is a stopped rotator in the solar system. Lots of things that are synchronously rotating, like the moon. Like all of those moons we were talking about this morning, they are all synchronous rotators. And that was the expectation for Mercury, which, as you know, was not satisfied by the facts.
So why is number 16 false?
Could be because I misanswered it. So most planets have atmospheres with superrotating jets. I guess I'd go with that. Most is pretty close, actually, around their equator. But Venus and Neptune are exceptions. Not Venus. Venus has a... Wait. Yes, Neptune is not... So Venus is not an exception. It has a super-rotating jet. It was kind of the first super-rotating jet. Neptune is an exception. Uranus is an exception. Yeah, and maybe Titan too, but it's not a planet, and we haven't gone through a whole season, so it's not exactly clear. But good to go. Anybody not bothered to print out a copy of the exam and wants this copy? Nope, no takers.